So community is essential for everybody. And then when we start to think about community as a business model and how you can make a business around bringing people together, there are no startup costs. There is recurring revenue if you're thinking about a membership model.
Welcome to Growth Notes, presented by InBeat Agency. Each week, we discuss the essentials of D2C marketing, paid growth, and influencer strategies. Hear from consumer marketing industry leaders who provide transformative insights and share innovative advertising tactics that enhance e-commerce success.
All right, we're live, Jane.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to see you as well. So I appreciate you taking the time today. Going to quickly run an introduction of what I know about you, and then you feel free to supplement how you want. But essentially, I'm with Jane Stechik. I should have asked you how to pronounce your name. Was that accurate?
You nailed it.
All right. That's a save. And who I had the pleasure to talk to recently and is an absolute community nerd. She knows a lot about building communities and how to make them work as a marketing channel and as a way to even drive revenue for creators. And there's multiple other cases of how to use communities, but I'll let you supplement to that, Jane. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I am a community nerd. I'm a nerd about a lot of things, and I love talking about it. So I'm super stoked to chat with you. And I've worked at different startups all around Bay Area, remote. So I feel like I've seen community from a lot of different angles. And yeah, interested in what we're going to uncover today.
Amazing. So I mean, what is the hype around community? So it's something I've seen spawn up. It kind of feels like email newsletter. Now it's all about communities and newsletters. So what's the hype about? Can you walk me through and let's get started there?
Yeah, there has not been a better time than now to think about a community as a business in particular. People turn to communities when we go through uncertain times. And I don't know about you, but there's a lot happening. Things can feel very destabilizing. People are also more isolated, especially since the pandemic. And the way people grow and change and achieve has always been through community. But I feel like many people now are finding that they don't have a community, especially for different facets of themselves. I may have a fantastic community at work, but maybe I have a hobby that no one else does in my friend group or with my family, and I just want to have people I could talk to about something like that. And that could be a really light example. You know, there could be people who are going through really challenging things and feel like they don't have peers to turn to that can help them. So community is essential for everybody. And then when we start to think about community as a business model and how you can make a business around bringing people together, there are no startup costs. There is recurring revenue if you're thinking about a membership model, and it sells itself essentially, because if you can get those results for people because you're bringing them together, you have incredible word of mouth. So I am not surprised that community is a pretty hot topic right now based on that.
Yeah, I mean, if it makes me think, you know, at Mighty Networks, you guys have built a tremendous community and you've leveraged that community to grow your podcast. What was the position of the podcast at the peak?
The People Magic podcast. I'm happy to talk about that. So we cracked the top 10 at our launch for all podcasts. It's an entrepreneurship-based podcast, talks about how to build a $1 million community. So to crack, you know, obviously being number one in entrepreneurship, amazing, but then to be in the top 10 overall was incredible. And we're still up there, which is great. We're continuing to grow.
And it's impressive, right? And how did you use your community to power that launch? Like, what was the tactical, how did that play out?
Yeah. So we, first of all, have just nurtured this incredible community of customers, people who are interested in community, for several years now. So part of this was the long game, but I think anybody can do this. It doesn't have to take years. And we told them what we were doing. We told them what was of value in this podcast for them, and basically traded on the goodwill we've had with them for so many years of just, if we have brought value to you, don't you want to share that value with other people? And ask them to download, listen, rate, and review, and give those signals to the podcasting algorithm gods that this was something worth listening to. And we had great word of mouth around it. We also did paid advertising, important component, but I think both of those two things together really worked hand in hand. And we worked with a great podcast production studio that really set us up for success with what strategies and tactics to do to get people excited around the teaser and the intro before the launch.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, that transitions nicely into what makes a good community. What are the building blocks of a good community?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that, because I think community is so hot now that everyone wants to do it. And you really have to think about who you serve and the problem you're solving for somebody in transition for your community to be successful. And what I mean by that is what makes a good community, especially a paid community, is people pay for progress towards a result, right? You're going to move them towards a really specific goal. If you think about your community as it's a place to hang out, why would they choose to hang out there versus Reddit, you know, a free Discord server, social media, their actual friends and family in the real world? That's a really tough sell. And I think people go to the flip side and they make their communities all around homework. You're going to come in and I'm going to give you 75 hours of video to watch to get you to where you want to go. That also is not necessarily the direction you want to go in. We have a ton of data at Mighty Networks, you know, and what we have found is the number one metric for community success is how often and deeply your members are interacting with each other. So not consuming your content, not how many affiliates you have, not how big, how small your community is, but just are your members actually getting value from each other is what matters. So if you're not thinking about your community in those terms, you're going to have a much harder time.
That's fascinating. So, I mean, good community essentially is not a top-down moderator just giving advice to people and just being there. It's more having people interact with each other, DM each other, message each other, and that's when you build a community that sticks, if I understand correctly.
Exactly. We often have this conversation, you know, en masse with people who come into our world, but then, you know, in one-to-one conversations, because we talk to certainly really big influencers or personalities who've built up an amazing personal brand, which they can, of course, leverage into building a membership. But we try to teach them that it's actually not about you anymore. It's really about who you're bringing together. And this, we call this concept, you're going from a hero to a host, because you're hosting these people and facilitating them. And it can be tricky for people who've built up this audience to really understand that it's actually not about you. But once they get it, there's often a sigh of relief. It's like, whew, okay, I don't have to be tap dancing to make this work. It's actually about the people we're going to bring together.
Yeah, I can't agree more with that. I feel like I'm part of a bunch of entrepreneur communities myself, and I know that the big value out of it is typically, I mean, twofold, right? You get advice and you receive advice on specific problems. So like, you know, saving time, finding solutions faster, and then connection, meeting like-minded people. And you kind of have that feeling that they're vetted by the community and there's like an instilled level of trust, which makes communities interesting for that.
Yeah, we had somebody migrate to Mighty recently, and their members made their own accountability groups for, it's also an entrepreneurship community. So not only are the members finding value in each other, but they actually took the initiative to make their own little groups within his broader community. And then he was able to shift, okay, so my value is actually who I'm bringing into the community, the people who I'm kind of targeting this to, and not actually telling them everything they need to do and keeping them accountable when they're in the community itself, which frees him up to do other things.
Yeah, that resonates perfectly. So our audience is a lot of marketing nerds that want, you know, tactical advice. So I'm curious, how can brands leverage communities as an acquisition channel? As I mean, at the end of the day, it's about driving top line. And how can you treat community as a top line driving activity?
Yeah, I think it really depends on what you want to do and the problem you solve for people. I would never come on here and say that every brand needs a community, which I think is like, oh, it's the new marketing tactic. Everybody needs to have one. I don't think that's actually true, but a couple obvious places to do it, and I think Mighty is a great example of this because we are a software company, is anything that might require education and support. If you can build a community around that, Keep is a great example. Are you familiar with Keep? They're like a
I am familiar CRM. With Keep, yeah.
Yeah. So they have their community on Mighty for their customers. They migrated from Facebook groups. And so it's an educational place. It's a value add to becoming a Keep customer. And it helps them focus their retention efforts on this one area versus trying to catch people in all these content places or on social media. It's somewhere they can bring their partners into. So actually there's like a business model within a business model if you're bringing in partners to help, you know, coach people on your software. And it becomes even a selling point beyond the software. So if I'm using Keep and I have a business that also serves the same audience that Keep has, being in the community itself is a point for me to connect with potential clients, even if I wasn't using Keep software. So it can really build on itself. One interesting thing for brands to think about is if they don't have an obvious need for education or a problem they're solving for somebody that translates well into a community, are there communities out there that have the same kind of audience as they have? Because similar, it's funny you started with newsletters. You know, I think we went through this phase of companies buying up newsletters where they felt the audience was really in line with their customer. I think we'll see a bunch of brands buying up these really vibrant communities where they're just perfectly aligned with, you know, the product suite of the brand, which will be really interesting to see.
Yeah. And that's, yeah. I mean, newsletter, we run a newsletter ourselves. I've got a lot of subscribers on it and it is an asset. It's hard to measure at the end of the day, the impact it has, but you know, it does. And you're top of mind for a lot of people. You don't know, direct conversions is always tricky. Google seems to take all the attribution. So it's hard for performance marketing, but I think, yeah, I agree with you. I think if you can build a community and get people to engage, you're building a moat as well. It's very defendable.
Very defendable. And I think another thing is, as a marketer, you always think about, okay, what's the action I can get somebody to do? And if you are selling them something high ticket or something that requires a lot of consideration, you really could have such a leaky bucket when you're sending them to your website, sending them to your landing page, they're not ready to buy yet. And you could certainly get their email and nurture them. I mean, we all do that and are familiar with it, but communities give people something to do before they buy. And if the community itself provides a ton of value, you just have this incredible warm pool of customers that have already signaled to you that they have this problem that you can solve.
Okay, so let's see. Like, let's imagine I have a direct-to-consumer brand. I don't know if you have any examples that you can share in the playbook. How do I go with community? What do I do? What do I get out of it? How do I make it work? Like, what are the action items? What's the grocery list?
Oh my gosh. It's like 7 questions in one, but like let's break it down. So the thing we would tell anybody to start with, and it could be your direct-to-consumer brand, it could be your B2B. And I think people often want to be like, well, I'm this and I'm special. The reality is, if you don't get clarity on who your ideal member is, you're not going anywhere. You need to actually know who this community is for. And if your answer is just our customers, that's not deep enough. So we found the simplest and most effective way to think about who your ideal member is to think about a person in a transition. At the beginning of this, I talked about how communities help people navigate uncertain times. That could be at a macro level, like the world is crazy, but it's also in your own life. The times you need community the most are when you're moving from A to B. So you're a new parent, you're moving to a new city, you want to up-level in your career, or you got that stretch job and have no idea what to do. So finding somebody in a transition, and the transition can't be, you know, they bought a new stainless steel pan, join our pan community. Like, this is not compelling enough. So I think if you're a B2C brand, really thinking about are there transitions that my ideal customer is going through where we can provide value beyond just here's a product? And if so, that's great. You know, like think of something like Glossier, which people have talked about. Oh, this is like a community-driven brand. And we may quibble on audience versus community, but I know that that's how people describe them. If you think about Glossier, you know, they sell beauty products. But if they were to create a community for, you know, Gen Z women who are entering the workforce for the first time and they're trying to hold on to their creativity and self-expression with how they present themselves, but they still want to be taken really seriously and advance in their career, that's really interesting, right? And if your people are seeing value in that, when they go to buy more lip gloss, like you're going to be top of mind for them. It may seem reductive to say it doesn't matter what kind of company you are, but to start with that ideal member and what transition they're in, but it's reductive because it really works and it makes everything else easier if you start there.
That's a very powerful framework. So let's imagine, like, you know, you have a hydration tablet company, then you could imagine a world where you're like, okay, well, let's actually target, you know, new coming athletes or whatever. And you would target a subsegment of these people that are going through a transition, is what you're saying. Because in that transition, I guess there's opportunity for change. And people, when they're in that mindset, are much more eager to join a community.
Yeah, because you're promising them, like, we're going to get you through this. So another
That's smart.
Step,
That's
another step in this framework, right? You have your ideal member in transition, and then you think about that person. How can we give them the best year of their life? The best year of their life. And we encourage you to be very, very, you know, idealist and bombastic about that. So maybe this is a new professional athlete. Like, do they get signed to a pro team? Do they go to the Olympics? Kind of depends on, you know, what you're focusing on. Are they in the best health of their lives? Whatever it is, you really want to go to that 11-star experience. And that is how you sell. You think about, okay, this is a community for this person in transition so that we can come together to have our best year ever, whatever that entails. That's your pitch. That is what you do. And people want to be practical or think about, I don't want to overpromise. But the fact is, if you don't paint a really vivid picture of the possibilities, it's just much harder to market. Everyone wants to say, we're going to come together in a community to learn, share, and grow, or to network. And it's like, well, what does that actually get me? Like, it feels like an obligation or a drain on my time even potentially, which is the complete opposite of what you want.
So, and to get back to what you said earlier, you said, you know, there's a lot of these communities that are built more as like a lead magnet kind of thing where they're like, hey, here's 72 hours of classes you can take. And like, by the way, there's a community, right? But what you're saying is there's a way you attract people to the community and there's a way you keep people.
Yeah. Yes. You could definitely think about it at retention. So for our community at Mighty, and we're a little bit different just because we are a community for people building community and we are community software.
That's meta.
Yeah, it's like many layers. It's turtles all the way down. But we really think about it as a revenue driver. So one of the core metrics we track is when somebody starts a Mighty Network, we check to see if they've been a member of another Mighty Network because that's a really significant source, right? And it makes sense. Somebody joins a community, they're having a great time, they're having a great experience, and they think, I want to do this. What software are these people using? So that's probably around 40 to 50% of our new customers every month. And then we look at how many of those people actually start in our community. So they join our community and then they go on to become a customer. And that tends to be around 30 to 50%. So we're responsible really for, you know, at least a quarter of our new customers every month because we're bringing them into our community. We're educating them. We are connecting them to other people who are great examples, inspirational to them, doing the thing they want to do, and then they upgrade. So you can find a revenue connection for prospects through your community, even if you're not necessarily selling something in the community. You just have to connect the dots. And obviously, you want to choose software that has really great analytics. It's probably a little bit harder if you're on a Slack or a free Facebook group.
Yeah. And you guys do that pretty well with the analytics layer you offer.
I would say so. I would say we're top of the line. We've been in it for a little bit. We've yeah. got some things. Yeah.
And then I'm curious. So, I mean, I know we've talked about this previously, but I want to re-dive into this, right? So how do you see paid communities versus free communities? And what's the mental model you have there?
Great question. We see, just from a data perspective, we see 50% less engagement in free or freemium communities. And when you think about what I said at the beginning, where the number one thing that is going to make you successful if you're running community membership, courses, and community is how your members engage with each other, you don't want to have 50% less engagement. So we encourage people to think about a paid community model. And the simple psychology behind it is people pay attention to what they pay for. People have skin in the game. They are incentivized to show up. It is a commitment they're making to each other. And then if you think about it, okay, if I'm paying this much, I'm showing up in a community, I'm showing up for myself, I'm also showing up for all the people around me. There's nothing worse than being in a free or freemium community and putting yourself out there and hearing crickets. It's just a bummer, makes you feel bad. So you might show up to a free community and be like, I'm all in, I'm going to highly engage, but then you're not getting that energy back from other people who are just kind of lurkers. It's not a great experience. That being said, certainly some people make it work. Mighty Community is free. We're a software company. We want everybody in there. We have ways of keeping people engaged. But if you are truly trying to drive revenue from your community, particularly, and do a paid membership, often people think, I'm going to have a free area and then I'm going to upsell people from free to paid. Your energy, your resources will be much better spent starting with paid and bringing people in there, because otherwise you're going to have split focus on these lurkers who may never really be your ideal paying customer.
Yeah, and I'm curious. So, I mean, would you see a paid community as a side business model to a company that's having another business outcome? So to get that engagement up, like would I be able to be an agency like Inbeat and say like, okay, well, let's do a paid community and I think we're going to get better engagement and that's going to be better for us?
Yeah, I think it's again, who are you serving? Like, what is the problem you're solving? What is the transition people are in? And if you can identify that transition, I think absolutely you could have a paid community. I think The thing I would say is this mindset that you have to give it away for free is not actually true and doesn't bear out in the data. It's an option for you, but you actually can be incredibly successful thinking about a paywall from the very beginning.
And then do you see people making hybrid type of models work where they have a free community that trickles into a paid community? And I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
You can. And actually, maybe this is a good time to talk about community acquisition in general, because there's some interesting models. And we talked about a little bit beforehand, you know, what are the channels that work really well for getting members into a paid community? But actually, it's not like there's one channel that's amazing for community and, you know, all the rest are terrible or vice versa. I wish there was, because that would be a really cool insight to reveal. But the truth is, all the channels can work, right? It's how you use them. And what we see is it's almost more about the moment you're in for your launch. So typically, when somebody launches a paid community on Mighty, their immediate membership growth comes from organic. It's like a newsletter list they've had. Maybe they have a YouTube presence. They have a group of people in their audience they've been talking to for a long time, or, you know, for a year, and they kind of nurture them and they say, hey, I have this new thing. Like, they've built up enough trust and equity with this group that they drive them directly to the landing page and they come in. So that is, you know, a really quick win for people who are just starting out. Then once that hot traffic cools off, often we'll kind of encourage them to have a lead magnet with an email series that then drives people to that landing page. So you're warming people up with, here's a little bit of free value. and you're doing it outside of the community. You don't have to say, okay, you know, we're not getting people to join our paid community. Let's add a free part to the community. You can just have a free lead magnet. Here's a taste of what happens. Here's a playbook you can do. Here's a recording of, you know, a great interview we did. You don't have to send them in the community. And another really interesting tactic is to really emphasize something that's happening live or do some sort of live challenge or event. You know, one of the amazing businesses that has built a couple communities actually with Mighty is a woman named Nancy Anderson, Nancy Anderson Fitz. She's a fitness, health, really focused on new moms in particular. And when you look at her paid advertising, you know, Facebook Ads Library, one of our favorite tools as marketers, you can see that she's advertising and many of her advertisements are around a challenge that's happening now, right? Like, it's not join this community. It's, hey, there's a challenge that's going to kick off. We're going to get you these results. Go do that. And that is a nice little entryway into the always on community. So any channel can really work. It's just about how you frame it and kind of the sequencing of it and where you are in your launch.
Growth Notes is brought to you by InBeat Agency, where performance meets creativity and influencer and paid media marketing. Propel your brand to new heights with our data-driven strategies. Visit inbeat.agency to elevate your digital marketing today.
Yeah, that's a pretty good way to see it. And I guess in that specific scenario, you go to the free resource, or in her case, this is a challenge, and there's an email sequence, and you capture in the community, and then you trickle down. And does she have a paid community as well? I'm assuming so.
She does.
Is the paid community? Okay, gotcha. Paid community is the final product.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a couple of them. Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, that's very insightful. And I'm curious, where do you see people make it work in the B2B world? You talked about support earlier. Obviously, that's one of the things that's probably good. And that probably creates a whole bunch of pages that start ranking in Google for SEO purposes. And it's just a massive traffic play as well.
That can be it. I think also, event series are a big one. So if you are a B2B company that brings people together for conferences, oftentimes that's a really nice jumping off point for a community. Are you familiar with ConvertKit, the email marketing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So ConvertKit does Craft and Commerce every year, which is an incredible, you know, smaller conference, but the people they bring together are really intentional creators. It's fantastic. And this year, they actually created a community around the event. So it was an online community. It opened before the event was in person, and it continues now that the event is over. So it was a great way for them to bring people closer in, was kind of drafting off of this conference they already had. And the plus side of it too is it's going to be a lot easier for them to sell conference tickets the next year because they have everybody there. Everybody's excited. Yeah, they're already talking. Yeah.
They have the distribution. That's what it is, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And a great Mighty partner as well. We love our friends at ConvertKit. The other thing to think about for B2B is having some sort of ambassador program or affiliate play. You know, you mentioned the hydration tablets. Noon is a really great example of a brand that we work with. And they had this ambassador program out of Facebook groups, which was working for a little bit until it wasn't. And by bringing those people into their own branded community, they saw engagement of just being active in the community, I think triple in the first month. They were just able to get so many more people in who had really not been engaging on Facebook. And obviously the ambassadors are directly tied to Noon's revenue. So the more engaged they are, the more excited they are about, you know, sharing the product, that has a huge impact on them. So that's another way to think about it as a B2B brand or a brand that is working with kind of business partners, is you might not have to have a broad community or a community you're selling, but can you bring your partners together in a really compelling way?
Yeah, I love Noon. They're a client of ours, right? They're under Nestle now. Yeah, and I love them. I think I'm a Noon ambassador at this point now. They send me a bunch of free Noons, and I'm just rock. I'm not part of their community yet, but I'm just having Noons all the time. Yeah, it's a great product. Great team.
Smart team. Build a community.
Yeah, build a community. That's it. And then, I mean, I guess one of the questions that I have is really around the user acquisition side. Like, I mean, you talked briefly about the channels. You saw there's no magic channels. I guess the question is, where does your audience hang out? Like, if you're a D2C company, good news, you've got a massive email list probably that you could sub-segment and find the right people that are going to align with the persona you want in your community. But once you've dried that up, like, what have you seen people run in terms of marketing efforts, and what does it look like? How do you make the unit economics work? And I'm curious if you have any insights into that.
I think one thing that is almost easy to overlook with community, because it feels too good to be true, is the flywheel of members inviting other members. But then again, it goes back to what, if your community is just a place to hang out for fans of your product, none of this is going to work, but that in particular is not going to work. But if you're bringing people in who have a specific problem or a specific goal, and through meeting the other people in the community, they get to that goal much faster, much cheaper, you know, in a much more fun way than grinding it out on their own. When you have an incredible experience and you're showing up in the world like lighter, more enthusiastic, excited about what you're doing, you talk to people about it. And guess what? You know other people like yourself, like birds of a feather flock together. One of the fascinating, I am a community nerd and I love to geek out on what are the trends I'm seeing just in the types of community. You know, we obviously have access to all the data and seeing who's coming in. And I was thinking about examples for you, and I was looking through these lists of like wins, and the number of dental, like dentist communities on Mighty is incredible. And they're making real money by bringing together these, you know, groups of really specific dental professionals. But if you think about it, how are they growing? Their members are inviting other members because dentists know other dentists.
Yeah, isn't that the best marketing channel or recruiting channel or whatever channel? Like, referrals are such a powerful tool, and it's something we oversee, right? We try to gimmick it and create, you know, mechanisms, but there's something there of like,
and it feels like a grind, right? You don't want to, and you feel, I don't want to ask somebody for this, but when it's actually built into the software you're using or just into the programming you're doing, you know, we have many hosts who are saying, oh, I'm running an ambassador challenge this month. And they're going to, you know, encourage their members to invite other members and reward them for it. But it's also just built in, right? Like, it's, so we find people saying, oh, I was talking to my friend and I realize they're the perfect fit for this. You know, I'm in a couple parenting communities, and when my friend is like, I'm having my first kid, I'm like, you're going to want this, right? Like, we feel like we're giving value to other people that we had, which is great.
It is so great to have people that are like-minded, a little ahead of you sometimes, you know, just give you advice on what's to come and how you should think about it. And I'm assuming that's how these dental communities are crushing it. New dentists are like, hey, like, I'm setting up my practice, don't know what to do. What software do I use? How do I find the right staff? Like, all these questions.
Exactly.
And you've got super great advice from it.
Yeah. There's another, I was really thinking about this example as well, which is we've seen in the last 4 months, probably like 3 horse and horse training adjacent community memberships launched to like several $100,000 launches. And I was thinking about it. I was like, okay, what is about horse people? One, a horse is pretty big investment, right? So if you're spending money on a horse,
you're locked in.
Yeah. Like a membership to help you take care of said horse. Okay. Makes sense. You want to keep your investment. The other thing is, like, I don't know about you. I grew up with, you know, cats, dogs, hamsters, not a horse, right? Like, it's an unknown quantity. And so of course you're like Googling and looking around, but if it was like, hey, there's a bunch of horse people in here, we know what we're doing, come on in, I'm like, please take my credit card. I don't have a horse, but if I did.
Yeah, that, I mean, there's such a feeling when you enter a community. And I remember, like, I joined this community forever ago, and I just had started out in business. And I just remember joining the community and just like feeling like, wow, like, these people get it, right? And I just remember that feeling of like, oh, wow, this is great, you know? And yeah, there's something there. And I'm sure people that do horse riding, you know, like finding a group of like-minded people where you can interact, share pictures, share insights. I can see
it's that. Amazing. And I'm glad you said that, because I feel like another thing that often comes up, and this is maybe a little more down the funnel of the software side, is, okay, well, I don't want to tell people to download another app or go to another place. So I'm just going to use Discord or Slack or Facebook groups or Twitter spaces. And I always like to pause on that and tell people, I have downloaded an app for a coffee cup. I have a coffee cup. It keeps my coffee at the perfect temperature. And I happily added that app to my phone because it brings me just an incredible amount of value. So if you're worried about, oh, no one wants to download another app, it's like, is what you're providing really not so like not valuable enough for somebody to download something? Like, that's a bigger problem. And usually people are like, oh, yeah, well, I guess it is, and get over it. But it's a common stumbling block, I find.
Yeah, I mean, and there's probably ways to prep up some value before they join. Yeah, I mean, there's got to be ways to address that. But I agree with you. Like, it's all about real value and perceived value. Both play into, you know, the whole approach. But yeah, if you're a dentist looking for shortcuts and ways to go faster in your career or practice, then I think, you know, it's very, very easy for you to download another app and get ahead of it. Yeah. I agree. It's interesting. What are other emerging communities that you're seeing? We've got dental, we've got horse riding. What are we missing?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. A lot of trading Bitcoin, still lots of people. And I think that makes sense, right? It's like a newer area. You want to trust the information you're getting and not just find it from a random website. So you want to talk to people. A lot of entrepreneurship, and I want to start a new company. I want to find a new business, which really makes sense, you know, given the changing economy, people between jobs, anything where it's like, I want to take control and kind of do my own thing really works. In general, you know, there are these kind of micro trends. Bourbon appreciators, actually, I noticed that one the other day. There's like 5 bourbon communities recently, and I really like bourbon. So I'm like all about it. But if we zoom out, if you're in one of these, let's call them verticals, there's a chance that you could have a fantastic community because the results you can get for somebody in these are really transformational. So if you think about career, if you get somebody a new job, that's worth who knows how many thousands of dollars of years. If you, in health and wellness, right, which is very broad, but if you improve someone's health, if you improve how they show up every day, that's priceless. Relationships, you know, quite a few dating, you know, sex, marriage communities on Mighty because that is such an important part of our lives. Finance, investing for very obvious reasons. And then there's a whole lot of things that, you know, fall into this special interest area, which if it's your passion and it feels more niche, you know, it might be harder for you to just find those people naturally. So funneling into a community makes a lot of sense. And spirituality, a huge one, right? If I'm improving your relationship with God, with, you know, your internal spirituality, whatever it is, your faith-based community, that tends to be a really big vertical.
Yeah, so too long didn't read. Communities aggregate around identity. That's what I'm hearing, right? It's, yeah, there's a lot of identity baked into it. Not things, but identity, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I would say so. And I think not just who you are, but who you want to be, I think is the important part, right? You said this earlier, which I think was great. You know, it's just people who are a half step ahead of you is a really compelling draw for somebody looking in a transition and not sure where they want to go, to see somebody who has it just a little bit more figured out and saying, I want to be that person is really compelling.
And to be clear, it feels great to be given back, right? Like, as community, entrepreneur communities typically have people ahead of you, people a little behind you, right? And like, it's amazing to just give back when you receive, and it feels good. And so it does create that dynamic where everybody's kind of benefiting from the whole scheme.
I think community has done well too, like what kind of culture you're creating. You know, another thing And this isn't a bad thing for sure. People will say, well, the first thing I want to have outlined is my community guidelines. And they're framed as like this series of rules, you know, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. And nothing wrong with having those, but we encourage people, like, don't lead with that. Like, don't have that be the first thing that comes in. And my favorite metaphor is, imagine you go to a party at somebody's house and you open the door. They open the door and they say, hey, come on in. Don't murder anybody. Don't yell at anybody. Like, it's like, whoa. Like, so leading with what we're here to do together. Hey, like, welcome. We're here to encourage each other. We're here to really listen to people's challenges and offer our own perspective. We're here to, you know, have the best year of our lives, whatever that means for your particular community. You find people actually have better behavior when you greet them with, here are all the fantastic and amazing things we're going to do together and how we're going to level up together and why. The bad behavior is a little bit less because you're starting on such a positive note, which is another thing that I think trips people up sometimes.
Okay. So change of pace. I want to talk about community acquisition, right? So we saw a bunch of newsletter get acquired. HubSpot acquired The Hustle famously, right? I think that's one of the most covered story as an acquisition channel. I think it would say it worked brilliantly for them in many ways and just gave them tons of visibility. Where does the acquisition opportunity exist in communities, and how do you make it work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think first there's an area of due diligence. You know, I think there probably will be some communities talking about, we have this many people, we're growing so fast, and looking under the hood at, are those people engaged? What are they doing together? You know, do they show up once every 6 months? I think is going to be really important for companies looking to invest in community. The other thing to think about is, how does this audience align, and like, how are they going to react to this purchase? And is it going to be an opportunity that feels really aligned, or is it going to be an opportunity that doesn't feel like there's a good fit between the values of the community and the company? So I think the simpler way of saying that is, it shouldn't be like a random vanity purchase for like, there's a big community of all these broad people. You know, it should be like, hey, we're a yoga apparel brand, and we found this small but highly engaged new mother fitness community, and this is a great fit because we make yoga apparel, they're doing yoga. But beyond that, like, our values are personal growth and, you know, sustainability. We see alignment in their values. Here are the things we're going to do together. And it's not just, we're going to slap our logo and put a link to our merchandise store, right? It's like, we have ambassadors that we're going to bring in. So I think when you're dealing with communities that are made up of real people, they don't exist if they don't have the people in them. It's a little bit different from a newsletter, which is really content-based. It's almost a big group decision versus you're just buying one newsletter. Like, you're buying the attention of a lot of people. You got to do it together.
And I feel like transitioning a community to like, you know, hey, we've been acquired by a yoga apparel brand, and keeping it authentic is going to be a bigger challenge than keeping a newsletter authentic, because it's like a one-way media. It's like, here's our newsletter. Here's our logo, by the way, sponsored by HubSpot. And then the rest is the same. Whereas a community, it's like, what do you do if somebody talks about other yoga apparel in your community? Obviously, like, if you do it right, I'm assuming you don't ban people from talking about other yoga, or else you're going to get hammered. And it's,
yeah,
a group,
I think,
of people.
I think it's smarter to just like commit to keeping it open and what it is. And instead of figuring out ways as a brand, how can I add value? Because you're ultimately, it's a long game. Like, you're going to get the loyalty by showing you that you respect the original intention of the community.
Is yoga strong enough of an identity thing where people join mighty communities? Are you seeing a lot of that?
We certainly do have a lot of yoga or, you know, other fitness vertical communities, but typically they have more specificity around them. So a broad yoga community, for sure, I'm sure it could work. But I think when you're marketing, it's really helpful to be like, we are for, you know, advanced yoga instructors who want to open their own practice. There's a really clear like result I'm going to get. Or, you know, a really popular one would be for somebody who's starting their yoga, because like we're going to do a challenge where over the first 30 days you're going to go through, you know, 30 yoga poses. It just makes it easier and less fuzzy around why you're joining and what the result you're going to get, which is helpful.
Yeah, that's a good way to go at it. I think it's always, you can take it a step further every time. Just make sure that you have the right parameters. How would you build a community around InBeat Agency, right? So what we do is like we sell a lot of performance creative and paid social, right? So I think like obviously we'd want to target paid media managers, marketing directors at direct-to-consumer online brands, whatever. And I think one of the interesting things in our way is the ads themselves, right? There's a lot of creatives there, and there can be a lot of sharing there. And I'm curious, how would you do it? Like, feel free to workshop.
Okay, yeah, let's do it together. I mean, I think it sounds like you have a great ideal member in mind, thinking about what their number one challenge. You know, we have a team that handles a lot of our paid advertising, but I certainly know staying ahead of the trends and thinking about creative testing. You know, you require so much creative. You want to be one step ahead. That's certainly a challenge for many people, I'd imagine. So thinking about how could you structure what you offer in a way that lets people share ideas and, you know, share creatives that are working, creatives that aren't. And the only structure you really need to put around it, it's not like you need to have a curriculum, I would say, to start. Just thinking about, okay, we're going to have, you know, this month's theme is about getting ready for Black Friday, Cyber Monday, right? 'Tis the season. At the end of August, getting ready for that. I know it's like scary. So this is the theme. This is what we're doing. We have two events a week. It does not have to be a lot. This is, I think, one of the problems people do is they just want to jam pack. We're going to have an event every night and it's too much for people. Two events a week. One is about, you know, sharing our new creative ideas. And then at the end of week, we all share one thing that worked and one thing that didn't. Like, you can keep it really loose. While you have that going on in the community itself, you're going to post 2 to 3 questions a day, polls and questions. These are the simplest content forms, right? No one's writing blogs. You're not doing these crazy videos, literally just these polls and questions. We have them built in natively at Mighty. Other platforms probably have some sort of embed or something you could do. But essentially, you are browsing on your phone, you're in the app, you can answer with a tap, it's multiple choice, it's hot, cold, it's percentage post. It gives people a way to contribute in a very lightweight way. And then the answers themselves, you know, if you're asking the right questions, are really, really valuable to people. Because again, everyone in here is like them. And they're like, oh, I said I spent 10% of my budget on this thing, but the community average is 70%. And then you start to see conversations happening in the comments. And literally with those two things, like two casual events and 3 polls and questions, you could have a highly engaged community that feels incredibly valuable.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned that last time is like, make it very vetted, like vet heavily up front, you know.
I agree with that.
I think that's a powerful way to go at it. And I didn't think about that, but that's such a powerhouse to have a community. Like it's making me think about it a lot. If, you know, that insight you're getting is also content you can distribute, and it's very powerful in its nature.
100%.
If you have media buyers from all the top companies there sharing insights in some capacity, you anonymize that and you've got a very clear cut picture of what's going on.
Oh, completely. I mean, even just from a software point of view, we get incredible ideas from how to update and change our product, both from like just customer feedback in the community, but just from like being at it ourselves and seeing what works. So you will learn so much going through that exercise with people, and absolutely vetted. I would say even if companies don't want to charge for a community, you know, set up 2 questions just to make sure the people coming in are the people who are going to add value. You don't even have to screen them if you want, but at least you know and can see, okay, these are the people who are really contributing and I'm going to make my community more for these people.
To be honest, Jane, I think I'd get everybody on a 15-minute call. Like, I just want to make it very vetted. Because I think
that's great.
In my head, I'd rather have 40 people that are highly engaged and like 1,000 people that barely engage. Yeah.
You're 100% ahead of the game in that thinking. You know, we've had people say, I only want to charge $1 because I really want, you know, just a little bit of skin in the game, but then I want to have a lot of people in my community. And first of all, $1, not really too much skin in the game. But also, if you think about that, you're like, okay, so you could have 500 people come in, but is that actually enough, like, money for you to actually build out this huge business off of these, this, like, it's not enough money for you to invest in it. Why are you thinking they're going to invest in it? So thinking about a more premium or more private experience that you can really spend the time on is very, very smart.
Yeah, I think that's how I'd run it. And then after that, you can open it up or whatever, like, you know, make it smoother. But like, I think, I don't know, what do you think? Would your first 20 members, let's say, need to be highly engaged, and then it makes everybody that comes in much more engaged? Like, is that a good way to think about it? I have a feeling that when a community's dead, I've joined a bunch of Slack channels that you just go there, it's just an intro channel of people just like, hey, I'm blah, blah, blah. Nobody's answering, and like, everything's dead.
I hate
dead. I'm
the
like,
intro channel. The yeah. intro channel on Slack needs to die. Yeah, it's such a bummer. It's such a bummer. Intros in general, one of the things we talk about at Mighty is this idea of people magic, and how do you actually create software that pushes people to interact with each other? And so we have this thing called the People Explorer, where you're clicking on people's faces and it's actually surfacing similarities. So I would click on your face and it would say, hey, you and David are both, you know, work in marketing, and you know, you're both went to this college and you love running. Like, what it's pulling together the information, which I think is a real game changer for our hosts and avoids the sad intro channel. But your original question, you want those initial people, yeah, to be engaged. What I will say is communities are very, very forgiving. If you launch with 25 people and you think they are the perfect curated group and it does not work, go back to the drawing board and say, okay, did I have the right ideal number? Yes, no. Could I get cleaner? Could I get crisper? Yes, no. Did we do the right things together, right? Did I have the right result I was driving towards? Because any one of those things, you can workshop and then you bring in the next cohort. You don't necessarily have to nail it on the first try. You're going to learn a lot even just by getting those people in the door. And maybe half of them are the perfect fit, and half of them are not. Like, you'll be better off at the end of it either way.
That's amazing. I think this is a wrap, Jane. This flew by very quickly. It was a real pleasure chatting with you. Is there anything you want to share with the audience before we wrap this up?
I would say, if you're at all interested in community, I may be a bad marketer because I'm not going to tell you to go start a free trial on mightynetworks.com, though you could. But we have a free class. It's called People Magic Profit. And I'll share the link with you, David. Maybe you could put it in the show notes. But it really starts from this foundation of ideal member, best year ever. And so it's platform agnostic, but you will have the strategy that I think will make any community endeavor a lot more successful. So that's what I would encourage people to do if they're at all interested.
Amazing. Thank you for everything, Jane. It was a pleasure chatting. And
me too.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Okay, sounds great. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Growth Notes. You can find links to all the resources mentioned in today's episode in the show notes. If you're finding value in our podcast, please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. It really helps us reach more listeners like you. Don't miss out on any insights. Keep listening and growing with us.